This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the only pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single bite-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4-point-something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your bite-sized pickleball podcast where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I am Michael 4.0 O'Neill here in Long Beach, California, joined, as always, by Mr. Scott Fliegelman. Today, live from the Boulder Pickleball Center, because we can hear the clock in the background. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Really excited to hear what's going on here. It's a super rainy couple of days here in Boulder, and we've opened our doors, and we're doing a pre-opening special for these couple of days, and it's pretty special.
Well, you've got to be psyched to hear that sound after a few months of work trying to make courts and make all the arrangements and do all the logistics, which have been insane. And now you got people out there whacking pickleballs around.
Yeah, pickleball must be fun because they're laughing and hooting and having a really good time. I should take it up sometime.
You getting on the court is probably an important thing at some point. By the way, guys, thank you so much, as always, for sharing the show in your Facebook groups. It's all awesome. We just hit our 20,000th download yesterday, which was amazing. And finally, if you want a carbon paddle, a CRBN carbon paddle, we've got a promo code 402P. That's at carbonpickleball.com. It gets you 10% off whatever carbon paddle you want. Scott, today we are talking volleys. Volleys are obviously a very important part of pickleball, whether you are in the transition zone, making your way to the non-volley zone or the kitchen, or you're already there and you need to defend or keep your opponents back. I thought we'd start, Scott, with some volley basics. You and I both come from a tennis background, and I would love for you to outline the differences between a tennis volley and a pickleball volley.
They're so different, Mike, that when you brought up the topic of volleys for this show, I had to think about it for a second, because when I think of a standard volley, just the tennis shot comes to mind, the footwork, the rebound of the strings and the rubber core. And I joked with you, I was like, yeah, I guess we hit balls out of the air in pickleball, but I just don't think of them as a volley. To be clear, the longer I've been away from tennis and more in pickleball, the less tennis technique is in my game. And I'm now a much more pickleball specific hitter of the ball out of the air.
So for the purpose of this show, let's say a volley is a ball you're hitting out of the air, generally in the transition zone, working your way up, or you are already up at the kitchen. Can we agree on that?
Yes, we can.
All right. So volley basics, the things I share with people when they want to get better at volleying are, first and foremost, as I've talked about a ton on the show, stable base, stable base, stable base. You're in a knees bent athletic position. You are primed and ready for the ball coming at you. You probably just did a split step. And I want you to think of being compact, meaning you're not doing wild, wide swings with your paddle. You're keeping your paddle in your peripheral vision. You are thinking stability. I want to be stable and still as this ball is coming at me. And then I want a firm wrist. If somebody fires a third shot drive at me, I want to be able to handle that drive and keep them back as far as I can, or hit a great angle that they can't get. But generally, I'm trying to keep them back as far as I can. And to do that, I need a nice firm wrist And sometimes I'll even add a second hand on my paddle, like if it's on the backhand position. I may add a second hand on that paddle just to stabilize that shot. So those are my quick tips for the positioning of volleying. What do you got, Scott?
If we're dealing with a ball that has pace, courtesy of our opponents, then our volley is going to look and feel a lot more like a tennis volley and everything that you just described. Firm wrist, I like to think of the paddle head above the wrist. So there is a V position as you run from your paddle down to the base of your elbow and back up to your shoulder. That's a powerful, strong position, whether it's forehand or backhand. And we're punching. We're redirecting the pace. Where I begin to start to think of something really different here is if we need to generate the pace ourselves, we're not going to do this with something that looks a whole lot like tennis unless, and I like to think of Serena Williams mid-court swinging volleys out of the air, which when we were kids coming up, our instructor said, no, don't do that. We don't swing at our volleys. Well, guess what? In pickleball, we swing at our volleys, especially if we need to generate the pace ourselves. Otherwise, we're appreciative of the pace from our opponents, and we're going to redirect that pace with a compact swing.
Well, I think there's also something to be said for a volley from the transition zone versus a volley from the non-volley zone. So as you're coming in, if you hit a great third and the ball pops up a little bit, you might want to take a rip at that thing, stepping into it, putting like a big swing on it and put a little mustard on it, as we might say. However, if somebody responds with a shot like at your body, then that volley becomes a block. It becomes a reset versus a offensive swing. What I see a lot of tennis players do is they'll still want to hit a slice volley from the transition zone. And I think this is because it's a natural tennis shot to do that. I'm curious about how you might talk to a tennis player that walks in with those slice volley tendencies and how you might try to sort of school them up in the pickleball realm.
I'm okay with the slicing technique from the transition zone if we're prioritizing neutralizing the rally. The whole purpose of a volley in the transition zone is to achieve neutrality at the non-volley zone. We're really not trying to win the rally,
right?
You know, from there. So if I can use what looks like a tennis technique, a chip volley, a slice volley, an underspin volley, and that allows me to get up to the non-volley zone and play some winning pickleball from there, then that's fine. The higher up in the levels you go, the more you may see topspin as opposed to slice there. And that's going to be looking a little bit more like table tennis than it is tennis. And I think that's great. And this is the 4-0 Pro Show. So we need to talk about topspin volleys.
Well, I think that maybe we get to define the like a slice volley versus a punch volley versus a roll volley. Do you want to sort of differentiate between those three?
Let's clarify. I do think if the pace is already on the ball, courtesy of our opponents, then it's much more the first two. It's either a punch volley, likely reset, redirecting of the ball, maybe slightly less pace. We can come under it and provide a little bit of slice so the ball hits and skids. And then lastly, in general, when the ball requires pace to be added, that's where we really want to go to option C. And that's a topspin roll volley that we can generate pace. And the topspin's there as our safety device to keep it in play.
Well, let's talk about swing path on all of those things. So would the swing path of a slice kind of be like we talked about with the large stick of butter, where your paddle is angled at a certain direction and you're skimming a millimeter off of this stick of butter? You're trying to keep your paddle in the same plane as you swing. Does that sound about right?
It does, but instead of a 3-foot stick of butter, how about a 3-inch stick of butter? Because we need to be compact.
Right. I was talking about height-wise, but you're talking about lengthwise.
I'm talking about lengthwise.
So, this is a very slight movement. Is it 6 inches, 8 inches kind of thing? It's not a huge path. It's a very, not a chop necessarily, but it's a very short stroke.
Yeah. And the length of the stroke, again, goes back to how much pace did our opponents put on the ball. If this ball is hot, then it's a very compact swing and we can use some of their pace and maintain some of their pace with a very, very compact swing with a slightly open paddle face. If it's a medium pace ball, we might have a slightly longer swing.
Well, you saw this a couple weeks ago when I was in Boulder. One of the things I'm working on in my game right now is a slight topspin on my volleys. And that's because I don't know how many times I clacked it off the top of the net while I was there, but a lot. And a lot of like open looks on a volley. So I kept thinking, man, I just need to start a little lower and come a little higher with these volleys because I see it. I see that's what the pros are doing. So it's one thing to sort of reach out and be as close to the net as I can, but I also need to change my swing path a teeny little bit to go from maybe lower to higher, unless you tell me otherwise right now. And that's going to help me clear the net a little bit more and get a little bit of lift on the ball where typically I was like punching it straight, and that's when I was whacking the tape.
And I was giving you a little dose of hard love when you were here as well. I said, Mike, if you're going to make a mistake, I'd much rather you make it a little high and a little long.
Right.
And that goes back to swing path, low to high, and the equipment progressions, you know, like we say here on the show of the modern era of paddle technology, you're playing with a paddle that can grip the ball a little bit better than 2 years ago. You can add 5-10 more RPMs of topspin. So especially with your skills, you know, I'd like to see you swinging from low to high, imparting topspin on your balls that you hit out of the air and give them a fighting chance of landing in and giving your opponent a chance to maybe hit an out ball.
Right. If they connect with it, the topspin might send it out. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. If they connect with it, we'll never know if it was going to land out or not.
Right.
So let's give them a chance to hit it.
One of the things that, Scott, we face all the time as pickleball players is we are stable and ready at the non-volley zone. Our opponents are at the baseline trying to make their way up to the non-volley zone. It is our job not to let them do that. So we have a couple of different options. We've got offensive volleys and we've got defensive volleys, assuming we can take it out of the air. And I want to talk about what happens when the ball is in the green zone, the yellow zone, and the red zone. And what I mean by those are the green zone being a ball that's a little bit higher.
For the volleyer?
For the volleyer.
Got it.
The yellow zone being kind of in between that you have to read. And then the red zone being down, you know, around your knees or below. So those dictate what kind of volleys we have to do. What I see a ton in my world is these balls that are down in the low yellow zone or the red zone and people trying to hit an offensive volley from there. It is way low. They do it and I go, you know, I don't know what pro you think could make the shot you just attempted because I don't know anybody that could make that shot. They're trying to rip the ball at their knees. So I'm curious of like how you teach your students how to decide what height to do which volley.
You mentioned the, you know, the offensive volley and the defensive volley. I want to add an option there called the surrender volley. Mm. So let me work backward there. If you're the two players at the non-volley zone and your goal is to quote unquote keep them back, one of the best adages that you can think of is hit the ball at their feet no matter where the heck their feet are. So if they're back on the baseline, hit it at their feet. If they're in the transition zone, hit it at their feet. Where things get tricky is if they've applied pressure following their third or their fifth, and you're a little worried about getting this ball up waist high and having them tee off on it, you may need to surrender your advantage and acquiesce to a four-person ritual kitchen exchange, which at the pro level happens really frequently because the pros are just not willing to give them a waist high ball in the midcourt because the opponents are going to tee off on that. So it's not offensive or defensive. It's just, okay, fine, I'll drop. Good for you. Your third or fifth was successful. I'm not going to give you an offensive ball here to tee off on. I'm going to drop and we'll now play catch and ball.
So I want to clarify that for a second. This is not when they are at the baseline and they've hit a ball and you're trying to hit a drop, which I see too often.
No.
The court is so small, people catch up to that, and all of a sudden you're like, man, you gave them an excuse to run up to the non-volley zone. Don't do that.
We do not do that at 4-0 to pro.
Don't do that. What you're saying is they're already in the transition zone. They've ripped a ball. They're on their way up. They're probably going to get there. And you're saying, I can't do much with this. There's no way I can really keep them back at this point. So I'm actually just going to drop it, maybe put an angle on it, and we're going to get into the four-person ritual kitchen exchange.
I'm assessing two things. You mentioned the green, yellow, or the red height of the volley. I'm assessing where in relation to my body I can hit this ball. And then I'm also taking a look at how advanced my opponents have made it into the transition zone and calibrating off of the two of those. If they've gotten a ball down around my knees and they've crunched and given me very little look at their feet, I'm not going to try to keep them back anymore. All they're going to do is just eat my return for lunch. So I've got to just surrender and drop. But right. if they've given me a ball up around the green zone and I can see their feet, I'm either going to hit an offensive volley or I'm going to be able to keep them back. So I'm modulating all of those things on the fly. And the more experience you have making that decision making, the better you'll be at it.
So they're hitting a third now and the ball's a little bit high and you and I can take that ball out of the air. They're not really committed to coming in yet because they haven't seen what you can do. It's just high enough that you can start doing something with it. Can you describe what a roll volley looks like and kind of what the swing path of the paddle needs to look like?
Absolutely. And that is the correct shot selection for forward to pro and exactly the scenario that you just described. I'll tell you this, it should be less wrist than most people use, especially on the backhand side. So if it's on the backhand side, I'm a pretty good fan of putting a second hand on there. We've been talking a lot about that on the show. I think the ability to work the two hands with kind of a fulcrum in the middle, I think allows us to roll that ball nicely. But if you have just one hand on the ball, think of it more as a shoulder joint dominant shot, not a wrist joint. With apologies to J.W. Johnson, there are not a lot of people who can effectively hit this shot with their wrist being such a dominant joint. You'd think Ben Johns is very wrist heavy, but if you slow it down and watch, he's coming from a table tennis background where this is a rather firm wrist shot.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, knee high or so. If it's ankle high, he's going to need to use some wrist motion there, but knees to waist, we can make this a long arm or shoulder dominant shot. On the forehand side, a little bit more wrist. That's okay.
I think of this, especially on the backhand side, as, and you can, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I think of this as like picking up a bucket of water in a way. That's sort of how the path of my hand tends to be. If I'm going sort of cross my body a little bit and lifting this thing up and the paddle face is dropped a little bit, I can see having this kind of bucket of water in my hands. But that's just me. We're doing our best to describe things on a court on an audio podcast.
that image works for me. I like to think of having a slightly closed paddle face. And if I use the wrong swing path, it just goes into the bottom of the net. So I need to really brush from low to high. And I'm just asking us to maybe consider that being with less wrist motion and more shoulder joint dominant. But close that paddle face up a little bit. If it's open, it's just going to be a lob.
So let's assume that that is red zone. That's like at your knees or below or thighs. You know, this is just below the net. You can't rip it. At the higher levels, those guys can actually hit some nice offense. I just sat on a court with your friends, especially the ladies with their two-handers could really get some pace and topspin on those thigh-high, you know, volleys. And that was amazing to me. But now let's talk offensive volleys. We'll wrap this thing up with the offensive volley, which is, these are high yellow and green zone. So these are like waist high, net level high and above. I love where their feet, find their feet, wherever their feet are, you can target their feet. I love angles in this case too. Like if you actually have an angle, I love the idea of getting one of the players off the court as much as possible, as long as it's a safe shot for you to hit. And I like putting a little juice on it if I can. You know, I will wind up and crush one of these balls if it's a little bit high. And with the thing we talked about earlier, which is a little bit more topspin than I've been doing, because I've been hitting it flat and then I hit it right into the net if it's a waist high shot. So I need to get a little bit of topspin on that ball to get the thing to tuck back into the court. But I love angles. I love pace. And yeah, that's where I'm coming from as my 4.77 current duper. Says.
I love it. And let's talk about pace generation for a second. Sometimes you have to pull from me my mechanical advice, but you won't have to here. My assessment is that way too many players forward to pro are using an overhead smash technique where they're articulating and pronating their wrist as if it's an overhead smash or a tennis serve on a ball that's way too low for that technique. They will use that technique eye level, chest level, torso level, and no, that ball's going into the net tape or it's going into the fence with backspin. It's not what we need there. I mentioned earlier on the show, Serena Williams midcourt swinging topspin volleys. That's the technique we need more of here. I'm going to use a high topspin volley technique on a ball all the way up to my eye level. Maybe even higher. It's going to have to be an overhead smash before I'm going to use overhead smash technique, you know, where I'm using a serve, a tennis serve technique. So I'd like us at this level forward to pro to really consider using a topspin, especially on the forehand side here. I'm talking about topspin forehand ground stroke technique for this volley, a much higher level than you've been doing. Let's not wait until that thing is completely over your head. Let's try eye level. Let's try chest level with this forehand topspin volley.
volley. Guys, if you have any questions about volleys or if you think we missed something, find us 4.0 to pro. There's underscores in there, 4.0 underscore 2 underscore pro on Instagram. And right, I will happily respond back for you. You can also follow Boulder Pickleball on Instagram. And if you guys want a carbon paddle, it is 402p.com/CRBN, 402p.com/CRBN. You get 10% off with the promo code 402p. And if you want a spin shot ball machine, 402p.com/spin shot, you get a free case for it and you get free shipping. Scott, thank you, sir, as always.
Thanks, Mike.
Hope you guys get a chance to get on the court today. Until then, we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.